Welcome back, everyone. This is The Change Show with Simon Phillips. Without further ado, let me introduce my very special guest and my colleague at the Changemaker Group, Jill Whittington. Good morning, Jill. How are you doing?
Morning, Simon. I'm very well, thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me to come onto your show.
That is my pleasure. It's great to see you. So tell us a little bit, Jill, how you got here. You know, what was your journey before you joined the Changemaker Group?
Oh my goodness, let's talk about a trip down memory lane. Well, maybe let's start towards the end. Simon, you and I met probably 5 years ago, 5-6 years ago. Yeah. And at that time, we were both working within the NHS in the area of change. And we soon quickly discovered there was a meeting of minds about how important people are in any change and in any business. Well, whiz right back to the early 70s. I have a little cough there. And when I first started work, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And in fact, my mum filled in an application form for me to go and work for the Prudential Corporation in London because she thought that would be a really good place for a good girl to start her working career. Because in those days, it was quite unusual to go to a university, whereas today it's the norm. It wasn't then, unless you were really serious about following a profession and a passion, and you know, there was financial resource within the family to do it. And we just simply didn't have that. So there I did. I trolled up on the feeling very important on the tube station. I emerged out of Chancery Lane tube station in the middle of the road. And I asked somebody where the Prudential building was. And it was this massive Gothic building, which actually filled the whole of the road. So I felt completely like a country girl who just landed in London. Anyway, that kick-started my working life. And in those days, the corporate life was very nurturing. And there was a huge emphasis on just looking after you as an individual and that being part of your working life. And that was very fundamental as a young, impressionable girl sort of starting her working life. So I started, and the whole what I discovered is the very first area that I was involved in was all about change. And it was actually sorting out a part of the business that was going to be decentralized down to Reading, which in those days was an up-and-coming country town that was growing in popularity, quite simply because it was cheaper to, you know, have staff premises in Reading than London. It was as simple as that. So that really was my first encounter with change, right from the very beginning. And very quickly, I mean, I think I've always had a curious kind of outlook on life. So very quickly, I started asking, well, why are we doing this and why are we doing that? And it was, if I can just paint the picture, it was a very male dominated, very stiff white collars and ties and suits, and breaks were at a certain time. If you arrived a minute after the working day started, a red line was drawn in a big brown book. So it was very, very different to the workplace now. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I literally progressed really quickly in my, sorry, to all the different careers. But the thing that I was able to do within a large corporation is change career many, many times. But because I kept asking questions and because I wanted to be involved in the new and emerging things that were happening, because at that time the internet didn't even exist. And, you know, there was so much that new that was happening and coming in. And so I immediately started to get involved with change.
Tell me, Jill, you were saying about the environment you were working in and, you know, very male oriented and potentially quite old fashioned. How did they respond to your challenges? Because I guess for some of the people listening now, they may not be in the same sort of environment, but they may feel a little bit intimidated by the people around them. So how did they respond, and how did you work with that?
The response was different. To be fair, the response was mainly very positive, and it was and surprise. But as ever, there were elements and some people who didn't want to change, didn't feel, I think they felt threatened. This was very early days of people uprooting their lives and families down to a completely unknown town and part of the country. And they just wanted to carry on doing it in the way they had, because in those days, you started a career and you thought that by the time you got to age 60, you'd be presented with a gold watch and that was it. And you'd always be doing the same thing. Mm. So it's, in fairness, my observation over the years is challenging and asking about change or what could be different or why are we doing it this way? How about doing it another way? The reaction was very similar to now, really, that some, you know, for most of the time, people will are quite keen to listen, but there will always be areas where it is seen as a threat or a challenge, or that sounds too difficult, or no, we just got to get on with doing what we're doing because that's, you know, we're up against deadlines and, you know, all that good thing. So although the scenario was different, the reaction, I would say, from my observation, it's quite similar, because at the end of the day, we're all human beings. we're just in different eras, but yeah. You know, in some ways, it's no different.
So I understand you've worked in many different types of organisations. Do you want to share just a couple of those?
Yeah, I did spend a good 20 years, just under 20 years in corporate life, but changing career many, many times. First of all, I was a business analyst. As a business analyst within projects, I discovered that it needed good project management, good leadership. So then I progressed into that. Then as a project manager, I realised you needed good strategic direction and strategic planning. So I then moved into strategic planning, and I learned all sorts of wonderful techniques and ways along the way. Two that were quite instrumental was being Crosby trained in TQM, and that fundamentally as a way of life of doing it right first time and having that communication and breaking down barriers, which was quite fundamental in my learning. And the other was as a European business excellence. Firstly, I took my area, my department, and through it, but I then became an assessor myself, because the thing I liked about that, in conjunction with, you know, any other kind of quality standards, is that it looked at the whole picture, the enablers as well as the outcomes and the processes in the middle. So those two things were the bedrock of my business understanding. But the thing, and I go back to my very first day at work, that stuck with me and has stuck with me to this day, is it's all about people. Yeah. Because you know I learnt, it's almost too, I don't even list the kinds of courses and things that I've done now, because I've done them, but for me it's all about the fact that whatever change we're talking about, people are at the heart of it. And then as an individual, it's what who we are and what we can do for ourselves that is the thing that really excites me.
And I'm remembering when we met, so you hadn't long joined the NHS, you'd come over from the police, I think, when we but what was interesting, you had a job, but the reason why you and I got talking was because you also had volunteered, if you like, to set up a people group. And yeah. You know, that was something that you were passionate about. And I think that was another one of those changes that you were talking about, where you just identified a need, yeah, like in the workplace, and got on and set that up.
Yeah. That's what, when I left corporate life, I then, as a family, we moved to Devon for a while, and I did some freelance work. But I also then ended up working as an SME, as their strategic planning manager. And it was one of the first IPOs at the time of the first sort of compare and select. It was Money Extra. It was something that was the first comparison website for financial services. But that in that environment, and it was in a smaller organization, the stress levels were so polarized and so amplified that yet again, what I mainly did, apart from putting all the processes and, you know, doing all the ticking boxes and masses of paper, was to make sure the people were okay. Similarly, when I went to, I then did some freelance work. Then when we moved to Wiltshire, I wanted to see what the lie of the land was in terms of work environment. So rather than doing it as consultancy, I'm a firm believer that once you've done that, it's really good to go back into an organisation and really experience what it feels like to be employed again, which is why I joined the police, helped set up their PMO for their project area. Yet again, it was all about the people, because it was although there were you know, support services, the whole way that change happened, it was very prescriptive, very process driven and process led, but the people were not receiving the right kind of support, nurturing and coaching in order to do what they needed to do. They needed to feel good and confident in themselves to be able to go out and deliver stuff in a very harsh environment. So similarly then, when we met at the NHS, whilst there were, you know, there's lots of support mechanisms in the periphery to support people in the NHS, but there was nothing there within that particular work environment on a day-to-day basis where other elements about well-being were shared, and even just a break. So yeah, we set up the people group, and I'm pleased to say it's still running today, despite several reorganisations along the way. And it's really well received. In fact, we've gone and spoken at some of their lunchtime sessions and things like that. It's just that, you know, it goes back to when I very first started. It's just something that's there that takes people out of their immediate working environment just for a little while, and just speaks to them and looks after them in a whole variety of ways, really.
Yeah, which brings us bang up to date. So you joined the Changemaker group. Your passion, as you say, is in well-being and helping people to, you know, get the most out of themselves without piling on the pressure and be, you know, going off down the road of burnout and all the rest of it. So no surprise that you embraced the Mindtea system that Vanda's created, and you know, you're doing some amazing work with that now. So tell us a little bit about this process you've created called Mindtea Applied.
Well, fundamentally is very, very similar to the basic Mindtea process that Vanda described. It follows the same principles, but the difference is that rather than being a generalized thing where we're just looking after our well-being and checking in with ourselves just on a normal general daily basis, Mindtea Applied is where we're applying it to some specific goal that we want to achieve. Mm. And that's where the New Year's resolutions bit comes in, because I was going to look up the statistic, but I think we all know the stats for failed New Year's resolutions is very, very high. And part of the reason for that is it something that we really are choosing to do? You know, there are so many, oh, I should do this, I should lose weight, I should get fitter, I ought to do this, I ought to do that. And for me, that should and ought is a big, you know, it's not intrinsically coming from what you really want to do. So the key thing within Mindtea Applied is actually making active choices about something that you really want to do. And I'm going to digress a little bit, but it's relevant. A lot of this also links to what is our passion and purpose, because my purpose quite simply is to help people be the best they can very be. It's very similar to Vanda's, and that's why when we met, we just had a meeting of minds over the wash basin in a ladies' washroom, because it was just, that's what we'd always believed. So it's really almost taking a step back from your, you know, maybe a very trivial New Year's resolution to really understand what is my passion, what is my purpose, and what right now is maybe the one change that's going to make the biggest difference to me. Because, I mean, I'm probably like many people, you could think, oh, I want to do that, I want to change, I want to, you know, and you end up with so many things, and we actually set ourselves up to fail rather than, you know, be successful and achieve. So the fundamental first thing is, what is the one thing you choose to do? And then we turn that into what we call our meme, a very memorable statement in the first person. So it could be something, I've got some examples here. Perhaps people procrastinate and don't like to make decisions. So you might choose to to I choose to make effective, timely decisions. Another example, which traditionally after Christmas people want to lose weight or get fitter, and so a typical New Year's resolution is to lose weight. I want to lose weight. That is could be quite damaging because it could lead to failure, and in fact quite unhealthy practices and behaviours. A far more positive and effective choice could be I choose to be fit and healthy. And that generates a whole raft of other actions. So once you've actually decided what it is you want to do, if you can imagine on a little linear line, your meme in the middle, and on the one side, what's the current state now? What is it that's burning, that's really motivating you to want to change? And just describe that in a few words, very, very simply. So if it is the healthy lifestyle, it could be I'm lacking in energy, I know I'm not my perfect size, I feel that, whatever it is for you. And then on the other side, just paint a picture of your goal. I feel fit, healthy, well, and full of energy, something like that. Or if it's procrastination, in the middle, I choose to make effective decisions. What's your current state? I procrastinate, I feel overwhelmed and low energy. And on the positive side, the goal, I make effective decisions easily with confidence. As simple as that.
Okay. And then I guess you're using the Mindchi process then to bed in that understanding of the current state.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think Vanda talked, I don't think Vanda talked through the whole of the eight steps, but we just simply go through the same eight steps. So we start off with that wonderful breath, and then rather than repeating the number one, we just repeat our meme. So I choose to make effective decisions. And now the wonderful thing about the brain is the more and more we tell it that's what we want to do, the more and more it will help us to do that, because we will start to reprogram those neural pathways. Yeah. So after we repeat that, and then we look back over the last 24 hours to see how we've done against that goal, just realistically and honestly feedback to ourselves, oh, I didn't do that, I took a bit of time about that, or didn't really want to eat that big cream cake or whatever it is. But then we don't beat ourselves up. We just say, okay, I've done that, it's in the past, what am I going to learn from it? And then move on. And then conversely, the next minute we're saying, well, what have I done that's really positive towards my goal and in the context of my whole day? Because 9 times out of 10 that list is far longer, but we tend to dwell on the negative.
Yeah.
And in fact it's quite an interesting stat on that. We have about 50,000 thoughts a day, and something like 70% are negative. Wow. So all the time, and traditionally with resolutions or making a change, we focus on what we're not doing well rather than what we are doing well. Yes. So that helps set us up for success. And then we do our beat, which Vanda quite eloquently talked through last week, to check in on our beat dashboard. How's our body feeling, our emotions, our actions, and our thoughts? We can change them. And then we pan ahead 24 hours and visualize the next 24 hours, and then we finish with gratitude. So it's very, very simple. But the thing that resonated with me when I first met Vanda and Mindchi is the fact that I'd always been seeking on a quest to find something that was very practical, doable, integrated. I'd always had a fascination with sort of Eastern philosophies and practices like yoga and Tai Chi and meditation and mindfulness, but they'd always been alternatives. So my quest was to make them not alternative, but just completely integrated.
Yeah, I love it. But what's lovely about the process you've outlined there is it's simple, and it's something people can do every day. And if you do take on that, the mindset piece about it really doesn't matter if you didn't have a successful day yesterday.
That's absolutely,
because we can reset and get off back in the
direction. Yeah, absolutely.
I love that about process.
Yeah. And the thing with our marvelous brain is that it's that plasticity of knowing that it's there with us. And that's why I go back to everything I've said so far in this conversation. It all comes back to us as an individual. And then the most exciting thing, it comes back to our brain and our mind and our passion and our purpose, because if they're all seamlessly working in harmony, then to be honest, anything is possible. But it's really important to, you know, we could talk about it in Mind Chi with that stickiness. What's going to make it sticky for you? Partly it is that passion and purpose, but also what's in it for me? You know, why do I want to make more effective decisions? Well, actually, because I don't want to feel the end of the day, I haven't achieved anything. I feel drained, overwhelmed. The decisions are just piling up and causing me problems. You know, what's in it for me? If I want to live more healthily, I'm going to have more energy, more time. I'm going to be more engaged, probably make better decisions as well. But yeah. But that's the sign. But you know, it's really, and what's in it for, and also when are you going to do it? You know, it's being very strict with yourself. When are you going to do that? When are you going to do this practice just to change those, create those habits? And also, would a buddy help? Sometimes having a buddy to keep you honest, perhaps working on stuff together. And, you know, we do that in the Changemaker group. And that does work really well. So it's, you know, what starts off as quite a trivial New Year's resolution, and we're talking about making a change, it can actually trigger quite a fundamental, you know, look at ourselves to find out, well, actually, what do I really want to do?
And I think the last 2 years has shown everybody that they, you know, that sort of fundamental thinking is a good thing to do. Can you now share time in your life when there was a significant change going on? It may have impacted you positively or negatively, but how did you cope with it? And what tools did you draw on to get through it successfully?
Okay, well, I'm going to go back to the very first time, as I mentioned earlier, that I was asked to run a project. It was a time when I was still at the Prudential. I was in what we'd now know as a PMO type environment, which we were just setting up. Based in Reading, all the IT development was in London. All the users were in Reading. And the tradition was that the IT guys in London built something, it came hurtling down the M4 to Reading, and everyone was expected to use it and it would work. Mm-hmm. This was literally my first taste of that kind of world at all. Mm-hmm. And anyone who knows me knows that technology is not my thing. So I had a big, I thought, oh my goodness. And the guy who asked me to do this, and I said, well, I've never done a project. I don't know the first thing about IT. He said, no, I want you to do it because I want you to ask the obvious questions and I want you just to be you and go and see what you can do. So, and that's what I did. And that is why I choose this example, because it was fundamental to my whole learning and my whole philosophy for the rest of my change world, really. Those days we used PMW as a project plan, and everybody thought the project was a PMW piece of paper, and everyone was looking at their PMW plans. But to me, they were unrealistic. They were never going to work. So first thing I did is just struck up the relationship with the guys who were working on it and got some users involved, created a team, which I couldn't believe was quite revolutionary in that, you know, surely that's the obvious thing to do. Got users talking to the guys who were building it, worked out with them. It's all the stuff that we do, stakeholders. What I found is all the stuff that we did then has now been labelled into something and turned into processes. And the danger is, I think, we can overly complicate things like that and become caught up with the process and the label and the technique as opposed to just doing it. And really got them to think seriously about estimating and to get a realistic plan rather than be driven by, you know, it's got to be done by that timescales, because the stress was immense. And what it also took was some serious challenging of some of the senior people there to, because the, you know, the, partly their reputation was hanging on, well, this, you know, what it was, a major multi-million IT development at the start of changing a whole customer service that we now know and love. And again, it just went down to basic stuff, talking to people, explaining the benefits as to why it's better to have realistic estimations and why other things needed to be involved, because the cost of not doing so, which is when my quality bit kicked in, is far more than getting it right the first time. And that project ran for over 2 years, and then it was delivered, and it was successful. There were things that were cut out, there were compromises, there always are. All those faithfuls, time, cost, quality, what's the most important at the time. So there were changes, and I think that's the other thing that I would share in terms of my learning. A plan is an intent at a certain period in time, but things do change along the way, and it's important to acknowledge that change and manage it and deal with it, rather than just stick, you know, nose to the grindstone and then wonder why, you know, there's dissatisfaction at the end.
It's interesting, isn't it, how the leadership of change quite often just comes down to the relationships that you have. And, you know, are you able to open up conversations and allow people to express their concerns? Because as you said, there's a lot of projects that I've joined where if you go out for lunch or something, or you know, you're having a coffee with somebody, they'll quite happily tell you what the problems are. But as soon as you say, right, we're now going to capture some of those and feed it back in a report, it's like, oh, don't attribute that to me. It's almost as if we can't share when we have concerns about a project, because the bosses have said it's got to be done by such and such a date. And very rarely, I mean, the interesting thing is, isn't it, if you say to somebody who manages people, when you ask, let's say, when you ask Simon to do that, are you 100% sure of exactly how it needs to be done? And most bosses will say, no. I'm just hoping Simon's going to work it out, actually. Yeah. And that's the thing that I found, if you can help project teams recognize that their job is to do the analysis of the plans and decide, is this doable? Can we do it in the way it's been imagined in the time frame, or does our expertise tell us something different? Because if it does, we've got to communicate that back, and people then need to say, okay, are we going to phase this project? Is it going to be done in a different time frame? But without that expertise being communicated well, then we end up in situations where, as you say, everybody's just getting super strong. And it doesn't really work.
So that, and that's why I chose that as an example, because that just stayed with me forever. I've learned all sorts of different techniques and processes, but to me, they're part of the tool bag. They're not the end in itself. It's all about creating the right environment for people to thrive in change. And as you say, creating those relationships of trust, and those just opening the communication airwaves, so that we really do have honest and progressive dialogue.
Yeah, exactly. And who knew that you'd be still stress busting today?
I know. Again, this is the thing why, even more so, I mean, MindChi, obviously, MindChi applied, I just think they're so powerful, so simple, can be applied to absolutely anyone, on anything, whether it's a business discipline you want to change, or a personal thing. Because what, I mean, as you say, in this last 2 years, is it's highlighted it even more so. But stress in the workplace, just stress in life, is no different to the way it was way back. You know, I think I had a golden time in the 70s where it was all very relaxed and there wasn't that stress. But once you got into the 80s, 90s and subsequently, stress has become a huge factor in the workplace and in life. And it's just, and that's why Vanda and I are so passionate about it, because it's so simple to help ourselves, be our own coach, engage that mind and brain, to do things we want it to do rather than we don't. Because as soon as we plant an idea in the brain, it can be, oh, I'll have that. It's like an untrained puppy. Oh, that sounds good. I'll go along with that and undermine ourselves. And it's no, come back. I want you to go this way.
So, Jill, that's absolutely amazing. Thank you for sharing that, because I'm sure the listeners will now have a good grasp of how they can pull through and make some of their dreams come true this year. So thank you for sharing Mind Chi Applied, but also thanks for sharing that example, because I think, as I said to you when I asked the question, sometimes hearing how other people have done things is a shortcut to help us get to a better situation where we're working right now, for example. So
yeah.
I'm sure that'll be a useful insight for people. Yeah. We're now come to the most important part of the show, which is your choice of a record that really sets you alight, that, you know, brings a smile to your face. The only criteria is it has to come from the 70s, 80s and 90s. So what's your choice and why have you chosen it?
Well, when you asked me, I just spoilt for choice, because I love music and I just feel so blessed that I grew up in, you know, through the 70s era, which I just think was just so formative for music. But I have chosen, and I've written down some of the references, because unlike many people, I don't remember those easily. I think most men seem to remember lines and quotes from songs, but I just don't. I feel me. So I'm choosing Changes by David Bowie in the end. And I just wanted to read, it was 1972. It was originally on his Hunky Dory album, and then it was released as a single. And just a couple of these quotes, because they just resonate with me. I think David Bowie was amazing anyway. He talk about change, the whole face and culture of music at that time. But a couple of quotes here. Pretty soon you're going to get older. Don't want to be a richer man. Turn to face the strange. Just going to have to be a different man. Mm-hmm. And then time may change me, but I can't change time. So, in fact, I was watching, my husband and I, only a few days ago, were watching one of David Bowie's last live gigs, where he was absolutely, you know, on tip-top form, and he did that, and it just, you know, I thought, oh yeah, that's the one. And it's just so relevant. It's as relevant today as it was then.
Amazing. Jill, just to wrap up then, first of all, can I just say thank you for everything that you've shared with us? That's been amazing. But how can people find out more? What can they do if they want to find out more about Mind Chi or Mind Chi Applied, or just get in touch with you?
Just email me, jill@thechangemakergroup.com. Go to the Changemaker Group website, make contact that way, or we've got our mindchi.com website, and you'll find me on LinkedIn. And I'd absolutely love to carry on the conversation with anybody who wants to talk about any element of change and how we can use our mind to help us.
Excellent. Thank you, Jill. I look forward to catching up with you, no doubt, within the next 24 hours at some meeting or other. So thank you for coming on The Change Show and being such a wonderful guest. And I'll catch up with you soon.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I've really enjoyed it.
Brilliant. Thank you, Jill. So that was it. Jill Whittington here on The Change Show. I hope you enjoyed that. Let us know your thoughts. And as Jill said, anything else you'd like to know about that, just get in touch with Jill at thechangemakergroup.com. Have a fantastic week, and we'll see you back here next time.